You're listening to a DM podcast.
Our pilot taxied, and then we felt like a bit of a chug happen, and I hadn't experienced it before within the aircraft. And what it was is that we'd bogged down in the aircraft. They'd had some rain. So then we had to, ask the patient to hop off and go and get his Land Cruiser and help us literally dig and tow the aeroplane out of the strip.
Still breathing okay at the moment.
Is it a big property?
That blood pressure is not coming up.
Hi, my name is Lana Mitchell from the Royal Flying Doctor Service. This is a podcast about life in the bush, mateship, courage, and the role that the Royal Flying Doctor Service plays in serving rural and remote communities. This is the Flying Doctor Podcast.
My name is Kira Lee Dargan from the Royal Flying Doctor Service, and I'm an Aboriginal woman of the Wiradjuri Nation. This podcast has been recorded on Ngunnawal land and is being broadcast across all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander nations. We at the Royal Flying Doctor Service want to acknowledge elders, past and present. The RFDS recognises that this is First Peoples land and always will be.
We have some incredibly dedicated and professional staff that work for the Royal Flying Doctor Service. And I was recently in Brisbane and I was able to chat to Jacinta Jones, an RFDS flight nurse who's been with us for some years. Now, a nurse is a challenging role in the best of circumstances, but for the Royal Flying Doctor Service, our flight nurses are truly something special. Because we're responsible for medical emergency response in the remotest part of the country, as well as delivery of primary healthcare services, a flight nurse with the service has to have some incredible qualities. They have to be professionally competent to be able to deal with whatever comes their way. So that could be accidents and injuries like broken limbs or lacerations, deep wounds, burns, stings, accidental poisoning, drownings, motor vehicle accidents or farm injuries. But they also have to be able to care for severely ill patients or complications from birth, infants, children, and also the elderly. And in addition to being able to work as part of a small team, flight nurses have to maintain a really good sense of humour. And I think that one quality, however, is evident with every flight nurse that I've ever met. And their love and care for those we serve is really evident. So in this podcast, we'll be chatting with Jacinta Jones, a flight nurse based out of Brisbane, and I'm excited to be learning about her world and her adventures. Hello, Jacinta.
Morning, Lana. Thank you for inviting me to speak and share my stories.
Oh, look, I've been looking forward to this. So really good. Have you always been a Queensland girl?
Originally, I'm actually from South Australia, but moved up to Queensland when I was, just in primary school. My mum was a remote area nurse, so I've moved around Queensland. And possibly one of the main reasons I became a nurse and a midwife, my mum is both. And I actually spent some time living in the communities that she was working in, remote nurse only supported communities, and actually was witness to RFDS clinics coming into those remote communities and providing those primary healthcare services that you've just mentioned, as well as the evacuations when the patient was too unwell to stay in town and be cared for by my mum, a remote area nurse, who are also extremely skilled with such a variety of presentations that they also encounter. Mm-hmm. So as an RFDS flight nurse, I am now on the other side of that service, having done primary healthcare clinics when I was in Mount Isa base, and now, as you said, I've moved to Brisbane, where we provide the inter-hospital transfers. So going into those communities, knowing the reward that has given me, and to be able to share those skills that you so beautifully put together at the start in the introduction, but being able to provide the care that everyone needs and wants to receive to those remote areas that would otherwise not have access to it. So the Royal Flying Doctor Service provides that vital support and critical care services into those communities that people live, work and travel across Queensland and Australia.
Jacinta, your mum sounds like she really played a really pivotal role as a health provider for you as a child. It sounds like such a rich and interesting childhood to be moving in different locations and to be seeing your mum being that health provider. Do you have any stories from that time period that really resonated with you?
Yes, I do actually. My mum was the healthcare provider, but she also was the patient when she actually herself rolled her car between the community that she was working with and driving into Cairns. So she rolled her car and RFDS Cairns was activated to come and respond to her as a trauma patient herself, which is always very humbling when you've been the one, when you've been the help and you become the patient. So experiencing it literally from both sides, knowing the impact it has on families and individuals to be able to provide that care and so timely, be able to literally fly into a site, scene of an accident, land on the roads, which I've done as a flight nurse, and our pilots certainly enjoy that very unique aspect of aviation with us. We have, special considerations for, road landings, car headlight landings. It's certainly for our pilots something that they wouldn't be allowed to do if they worked for a different organisation.
Yeah. Your mum must be a very strong woman. I've talked to and interviewed a couple of remote area nurses and they just strike me as the most amazing characters. You know, I was talking to a lovely now retired remote area nurse in Jericho in Queensland on one of my podcasts. Oh, she's just, gosh, the stories. In fact, her podcast interview has never left me because it was some of the most outrageous storytelling that was so real. It just really, really impacted me listening to her talk of things that she's had to respond to and to deal with there alone as the only person, as the first responder. And then while, you know, police and RFDS and everybody else are on their way. So you decided at a young age that you wanted to become a nurse. Did you? Where did you first start your training or first start your career?
Yeah, I came to Brisbane to go to university, and then I did my first couple of years in Atherton Hospital up on the Tablelands, inland from Cairns, which is beautiful. Worked in emergency there in the high dependency unit, which I really loved. I loved the pace of the department. I loved the solutions focus. So patients were coming in, we would manage them, treat them, and have a destination for them. So either they were able to return home, they would be admitted, or they would need to be evacuated out. And at that point, it was the helicopter that was coming up from Cairns, or we would put them in an ambulance and escort them down to Cairns. From there, I did my midwifery at Cairns Base, which, I had always wanted to be a midwife, and that is a requirement of being a flight nurse for RFDS Queensland. Then I moved across to Darwin and worked in Birth Suite there, which is also a very amazing place and busy, very busy. And then moved back to Queensland and was living in Mount Isa, working at the hospital there in maternity again, and literally fell sideways into the RFDS. My mum, again, showed me an ad and said, you know, this would be available. So I applied and obviously was successful in that job application because still wear the uniform, but worked for quite a few years in Mount Isa doing those primary responses, the primary healthcare clinics as well, and then moved down to Brisbane. So I've been in Brisbane, so that was 17 years ago.
Wow.
I've been in Brisbane for about the last 14 and a half, 15 years, doing a lot of inter-hospital transfers up and down the coast, northern New South Wales. We'll go out as far as Birdsville to that border of Queensland and then up to Cairns. So that's been amazing to see this amazing country and help everyone, not just in the remote communities, but up and down the coast. As recently as Tuesday, I was on shift for our Brisbane base and moved a lady who was in threatened preterm labour 16 weeks too early. So that was time critical to move her to a tertiary centre so that her baby, if and when it was born, was going to receive that specialist care. So being aware that we touch every corner of Queensland and the other states as well. So from Mount Isa, would travel into Northern Territory. Mm-hmm. So I was flying there last week and did crow across the border into Alpurrurulam and land there at the community. So it's amazing to say that you wake up, you know, in your own home and then during that day you may have actually covered the length of Queensland and then come back. So in my current role, I'm the state manager for aeromedical nursing. So my role looks after all of the flight nurses who work underneath in the local teams with their nurse managers. So that's been really rewarding as well. I get to travel between the bases, visit the teams, check in with them, but also jump on a few shifts, which is great, and get to see really every little bit. After 15 years of being a flight nurse, I flew out of Cairns for the first time 2 years ago. I went to Horn Island for the first time and felt like my first flight again. I had my camera out taking a photo. Was that a crocodile? Was it a big log? Could have been a crocodile. We'll just stick with a crocodile story because that's better than a big piece of wood. But definitely thinking about nursing as a career, nurses are not what you expect to find on an aeroplane. You know, we're more accustomed to thinking, you know, that we work in hospitals, that we work in clinics, in the communities. But when I think of my job and I'm a nurse on an aeroplane, it is quite unique. Mm. Not only to go out and see all those communities and have an impact there, but as you mentioned with our remote area nurses, the team is not what we expect normally. So our team becomes literally whoever is within Kui of us. Yeah. So as you mentioned, police, SES teams, station hands, people just come from nowhere, which is amazing. In the time of need, the communities just really band together, which is brilliant to see. And we become just one link in that chain for survival often of that patient or family. And that's really rewarding to know that as a community, as Queenslanders, we come together and we work for the best outcome for each other, even if we don't know each other. Mm. I mean, it's really quite lovely. We can be loading one of the ringers into the aeroplane and they can say, oh, I remember you. You picked me up, you know, a month ago, or, you know, they're helping us lift their mate into the aircraft. And not that we want to be, you know, visiting all the time because they're having accidents, but there is a bit of continuity of care there where we see the same people. They're either the patient or the help, or the support, which is really amazing, and they definitely support each other. And I think the reward for that, and I can only imagine for our remote area nurses, is that they do have that continuity, that they're part of the community, mm-hmm. that they help them in their time of need. For us, with our patients, I know, you know, it can be the worst day of their life. They're not only unwell or injured or have rolled their car, but we're also removing them from their normal support networks. So if you were to live in a city and you're admitted to hospital, it's very traumatic. You know, you can't go to work, you can't do your normal cares, you can't look after your pets, but at least your family and friends can visit you and you're still remaining local. However, for all of our patients, we are taking them away from their normal support networks, from even they can't feed their animals. Obviously, a lot of our farmers, they've got a lot of commitments that they then have to find someone else to help them. A lot of our patients would never have been on a plane. So it's massive. We've only got our patient contact for quite a short time. So we've got a real responsibility to not only care for them clinically, but also emotionally to offer them every support that we can to try and get them through that crisis event, really. And often they're more worried about their animals than themselves. I'm going to say all the time, not just often. They're more worried about their dogs or their cattle or whatever they're leaving behind than themselves, which is just testament to their character.
Yeah. So Jacinta, when it comes to like a day in the life of a flight nurse, how does that start? So you have a basic roster, correct? And that shift would start at about what time of day?
Yeah, so we have 7 bases across Queensland. 3 of our, we call them traditional bases, so Cairns, Mount Isa and Charleville, do two shifts per day, a 6 a.m. day shift and a 6 p.m. night shift, so 12-hour shift period. Along the coast, we also do that for Bundaberg, and then Townsville, Rockhampton and Brisbane have a 9 o'clock shift as well as the 6 o'clock in the day. So we have full 24-hour coverage. As a flight nurse, we are rostered for that period with our pilot, same period, and our traditional bases also have the doctors, where we either have a job pending still from the previous shift that we would get tasked for straight away, or alternatively develops during the shift.
Could I just ask you one question? So because we have 23 aero bases around the country and because our service is national, so you're talking from your perspective as Queensland and your role, which is fantastic. But I'm presuming that most shifts for flight nurses would generally be of a similar nature around the country. Would that be right? Like Western Australia, South Australia, Northern Territory, New South Wales. I presume almost all of them would have an early start and be a 12-hour shift and then another 12-hour shift that goes through the night. Would that be right?
My understanding is Western Ops do that. I think Central Ops, because they have shorter sectors, have some 8 hours, some 10 hours and some 12-hour shifts. Mm. So they have a little bit more variety in their shift structure. Mm. The size of Australia makes that, you know, sometimes challenging. So there's 12-hour shifts because you might need 12 hours to get from Brisbane to Cairns. And I think Southeast section might also operate on some slightly different shift patterns. But I think overall there is always 24-hour coverage across Australia to make sure that we do maintain that service delivery.
Yeah.
We know that people are up and about at all hours, so it could be any time of need. And people don't become unwell just in business hours. So we have that full coverage. The variety is amazing. Yeah, we don't know what we'll be looking after, but we also don't know where we'll be going across the country. So that's definitely a plus for flight nursing. We would never say it was routine.
Hmm.
We might get to see Fraser Island from the air a couple of days in a row, but it's great variety of skills and also sights.
As I mentioned earlier, this podcast has been made possible with the support of Isuzu Ute Australia. Having reliable vehicles is imperative in the harsh Australian outback, and Isuzu have provided D-Max Utes and MUX SUVs to pull seven large RFDS flight simulators as they engage in school, community and field day activities for the Royal Flying Doctor Service. These simulators are full-size planes, minus the wings, and the Isuzu D-Max and MUX vehicles are a perfect match for the long-distance heavy towing demands of these RFDS simulators right across Australia. So keep an eye out for them as they travel around each state, and we would love to see photos and locations on our Flying Doctor podcast community Facebook page when you see them.
Now, if you're on shift and there's no emergency or there's no call that's come in for you to go somewhere, what do you use that time for while you're at the base and on shift?
Yeah, we do a lot of checking of our packs during our downtime and our equipment, as well as training opportunities. So looking after all of our patients can be from a newborn or a birth through till 100 years of age and everything that happens to people during that lifetime. So a lot of skill maintenance, a lot of knowledge upkeep, but also packs. So we travel obviously in the aircraft, which is limited capacity. We need to make sure that we've got everything we need for that urgent response within weight restrictions that the pilots need to manage, obviously with the weight and balance. But we do a lot of checking, making sure we've got what we need and managing our resources that way.
Could we talk about weight for a moment? Because I think a lot of our listeners are not aware of how critical what goes on to a plane is in terms of where that plane has to go, the amount of fuel it uses and so forth. So let's say you had to do a long trip from Brisbane to, gosh, I don't know, maybe you can choose a location.
Quilpie.
Yeah, Quilpie. And you knew that you had to pick up a large patient at the other end. How does weight play into both the equipment that you have to take as well as the patient and any support that they wish to bring with them?
Yeah, absolutely. So it is quite a Tetris jigsaw puzzle. So our pilots will be looking at fuel requirements and ability to refuel on route. So we often need to stop for fuel. They'll be looking at weather and holding requirements. So if there's any sort of weather patterns, storms that we either need to go around or we may not be able to land, so we'll need to possibly have a missed approach and have a second try or an alternative landing location. So they do a lot of calculations in the background, and we need to provide the weights for everything we have. Every kilo that we have on the aircraft needs to be accounted for so that they can have the equivalent in pounds in fuel. So if we have a particularly a stormy day, we may need to remove some of our equipment, and we do that with clinical judgment, knowing what we're going for. Equally, the other day with our prem labour, we had an additional staff member having an assessment day, so we did remove some of the equipment and also balance the fuel for that urgent response. And actually on that day, well, I was very happy to have a second midwife on the aircraft with our doctor who had some paediatric intensive experience, so we were more than happy to manage whatever was going to happen. Mm. But normally it's a single flight nurse plus or minus a doctor. So it is that planning, not only from the aircraft side but also the clinical requirements. What equipment do we think we might need? Do we need to get blood from the hospital? Is this a trauma patient that's going to need a vacuum splint do we need more? So it's always a lot of planning and resourcefulness, and that, and there's a lot of reward in that, making the best outcomes we can by that preparation, both from the aviation side but also clinical requirements, and coming together as a unique team to achieve those outcomes.
Now, I know that when a call comes in through 000, somebody's had an accident, let's say a vehicle's rolled on a remote part of country somewhere, the phone call that comes in is then assessed in terms of that patient, and that accident or injury or trauma is then essentially assessed and triaged exactly as it would happen in an emergency department. And it's determined, is this, you know, priority one? Is this a little bit lower down in terms of how quickly we have to get out there? And is this, you know, life-saving, or is this merely, you know, we need to get out there and this person needs to come into a tertiary hospital for some surgery or for whatever? Now, how is it determined when a doctor is required? Is it at that particular point of when the call comes in from 000 and when it's assessed and triaged, that it's determined this is priority one and we need to have a doctor on board? Or is there another process in that?
Yeah, sure. So within Queensland RFDS, we receive a lot of our tasks through Retrieval Services Queensland, who have the 000 calls come through to them, or the referrals from the hospitals. So we also have the system where our traditional bases are contacted directly from community members, and they're ringing the 1300 My RFDS phone number to activate help if they haven't got access to 000 services. So at that point, yes, an assessment is made on the information available. And in some instances, it's very limited. And in other instances, it's a hospital transfer where we have a lot of information, and we're quite comfortable with that what we're going to is going to be as advertised.
Right.
So based on that and the level of information that we have, we usually make a very quick decision. How many hands do we need, and what skills do we need to have? So on those calls that are coming direct from communities where it is a little bit unknown, we would always assign a flight nurse with a doctor to know that we could be, you know, needing a higher level of care, and that patient might be higher acuity. Across Queensland, we have statistically about 80% of our flight nurses fly on their own for those patients, and that assessment is made based on clinical condition, even distance and risk of deterioration. So our flight nurses make that assessment based on the information they have, and can ask for more support at any time. So that's we call it phone a friend. We understand that there's no red button on the wall in the aircraft. You can't call for more help as you can in a hospital. It's literally it's autonomous practice, which is very, very rewarding. But also we do offer full support to say we're not, we set ourselves up to succeed and nothing else. So we make the decision normally at the start, but it can change. Patients can deteriorate or even improve. So what we thought initially on tasking may change, and we get an update, and they're actually better than we thought, which is great. And we can downscale.
I know that nationally, you're right, when you talk about Queensland, about 80% of flights are just flight nurse only with the pilot. And I know that tends to be about what it is nationally. It makes me chuckle because we're called the flying doctor, but maybe we should have been called the flying nurse.
I won't comment.
I say that knowing that responsible for brand, I'll get slapped for that one. But it's just I don't know if our flight nurses feel validated enough, but I think the world of you, and I know that 80% of the work that is done through our service is through amazingly talented flight nurses. So if you haven't been validated enough, let me tell you, you well appreciate it.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, to be completely honest, we wouldn't be there without our pilots, and none of us would be there without our engineers. So it really is, I always just say retrievals is a team sport. So yeah, we cannot function in isolation. Sometimes we'll have a chuckle and go, well, if the aircraft's broken and the pilot's not available, we could do a nurse-only road job. But again, we're driving.
Yeah.
You know, someone's going to have to drive us. So it's definitely a team sport with not just RFDS staff involved, but ambulance services and other hospital, as we've said, community members, everyone coming together for the best outcome. So it's very unique in that way. in that we're not just amongst nurses or medical professionals or health professionals. We get to dabble a little bit and learn some aviation terminology, and I know our pilots enjoy learning a bit of medical terminology, and they try and make a little mini prediction on, you know, the patient's outcome.
Oh, that's great.
That's good.
Now, we respond to all manner of emergencies and accidents and injuries and illnesses. I presume that you would witness a fair dose of trauma on a regular basis. Does that impact you, and how do you cope?
Yeah, absolutely. I think establishing what's normal for the role is interesting. If we said it's not normal to see trauma and even, you know, poor outcomes for patients in the community, but for us in a retrieval environment, it can seem normal, but we need to acknowledge that it's not normal. We certainly follow up with our staff. We have a lot of support and debriefing to make sure we are checking in. I think there's a lot of training, and we come into it knowing that we do our best. Everyone's doing their best. There will be some outcomes that we didn't want from the outset, but as long as we can reflect and say we did everything we could to manage and support, and even if it is a poor outcome, reflect on the positives that we were part of that, and that we supported the family or we supported the patient during that time, and that we gave that compassion and that care, because it is challenging in any environment, in any emergency response. Not every day is a star day. Sometimes it is a lower moment. So I think acknowledging that what we do every day is not what most people do every day, but knowing that we do our best. I think personally, I can put my nurse, you know, role on, and you put your flight suit on, and you know that these are your roles, and you work, you support your team as well, and everyone works together. And then to reflect at the end and just definitely highlight what we've done well, regardless of the outcome. Definitely what we can improve on for next time, and support each other through the challenges, because they definitely come.
What would be for you the recovery or retrieval that has sort of imprinted on you the most over time?
Many. I'd say many. Definitely one of the early retrievals that I did in my career, having stepped out of a very well-supported emergency department, was across into the Northern Territory border. And there had been some people travelling through, well, around Australia, and they had hit the ball dust and rolled their vehicle. And one of the passenger was quite severely injured. So going even across a state border, landing on a highway, we landed on the road. We packed our gear into the back of a Land Cruiser that had come from the homestead, and drove probably 40 kilometres to the accident site. I remember it being really hot, so I'm just guessing it was summer, but it was really hot. And we were carrying our packs, and we had oxygen and suction and all of our airway equipment. And I remember when we arrived, there was, people had just come from nowhere to help us, and they'd put up a tarp for shade for the patient. And we managed that trauma patient with the resources that we had, and I don't believe we could have really done any more care. It was challenging in that it was so remote. However, we were greatly supported and assisted by the people that just appeared, either from neighbouring stations or even people also travelling on the highway, but very remote location of Australia, and did move that patient back to a tertiary centre, which made for a, you know, quite a journey for everyone involved. For our pilots who aren't medically trained, we obviously need to make sure that we also support them through it, knowing that, you know, everyone's played their part and done their bit, outcome or not, as we talk through, because our ability to get up the next day and do it again is so critical, knowing that if that was, you know, someone I knew, or that was my family member, or, you know, we need to keep moving forward and keep providing that service, which is so vital. But also our team can only function if we're supported ourselves and get that time.
Yeah. I presume, and I ask this tentatively, but obviously from a nurse perspective or a clinical perspective, it's everything from birth all the way through up to death. And so there would be, to a degree, a fair bit of death that you encounter as a consequence of your role. Has that impacted you at all?
I don't think negatively. I think it's, again, reflecting on what we can do well. So not only do we become involved if there's an acute accident, and the patient is so critically unwell that perhaps they don't survive the incident. We also become involved when there might be a patient who is within the palliative care team in a tertiary centre, and we are given the opportunity and the privilege to move them back to their community so that they can pass away with those support networks that we mentioned had been taken away from them. So the end-of-life transfers are something that are really significant, and we often bring a family member with us on that flight so that they can be there and support their relative or their friend, knowing that that end of life is imminent and could actually happen on the flight. So both acute illnesses but also known prognoses that will end in death, we're also part of that end of life care, which is not something that you normally do between hospitals or outside of a home, but being able to take that patient back to where they know and have them back in their home even for their final days is really rewarding. It's not just all about, you know, rapid response side of the road accidents. It can be about just moving people where they need to be, whether that's at a tertiary hospital, whether that's back in their home. It's whatever they need, we're able to provide that, so that's really special.
That's great. So do you have to care for many children, and is it different in terms of the care that you have to deliver to adults?
Yes, we definitely do move a lot of children. I think children, they have great compensatory mechanisms, and when they're sick, they're sick. We have the great support of their parents coming along with us, which is great. Yeah, a three-year-old, that's where they want to be, with their parents. So we'll facilitate that to happen. We certainly try and engage with our little ones. We have little iPads that have, you know, little games and things on them, just to distract them even. But a lot of them will get up in the aeroplane and love it because, you know, they've never been on a plane and they can see little tiny houses and little tiny trees. So that's really exciting. But again, I think that's what we can do well. So we support the child clinically and emotionally, and also support the parents because, again, it's probably going to be their worst day.
Yeah.
No, the children are, another group that we get to look after and engage with. It's beautiful to see them well again if we do go back into that community. And I did have a case when I was working up in Cairns where a little one had actually been badly injured and mauled by a dog, actually, a little toddler, and we moved her. She was quite unwell. And then I went back only about 3 weeks later into the same community, and the ambulance officer was able to tell me that she was back in community and running around again and living her best childhood. So that was really lovely as well, just to hear that that feedback and know that she had done really well.
Oh, that's great.
So that was good.
There's always the more lighthearted and funny side of a job. Do you have any stories that you could enlighten us with that still make you chuckle when you think about them?
Yeah, absolutely. I mentioned before about the everyone coming together and helping us with the outcome, and I've got an interesting experience where we were the help. We landed actually at Dagworth Station, which is related to Waltzing Matilda. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it was the station that Banjo Paterson wrote Waltzing Matilda. It has a billabong, and it's quite, you know, iconic really for Australia. So we landed at Dagworth Station.
Is it really Dagworth? Isn't there a
Dagworth?
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Landed at Dagworth Station for one of the one of the station workers was quite unwell. So we landed and we loaded him up and did our medical, you know, assessment and loaded him and put all the monitoring on, and, you know, we were the help. We were really coming to help. And then our pilot taxied, and then we felt like a bit of a chug happen, and I hadn't experienced it before within the aircraft. And what it was is that we'd bogged down in the aircraft. They'd had some rain, and we'd literally driven through a green patch, which I then learnt, if there's green patches on a brown runway, don't stay away from them, because that means that they've had moisture and they could be boggy, and this certainly was. So we were bogged. So then we had to, ask the patient to hop off and go and get his Land Cruiser and help us literally dig and tow the aeroplane out of the strip. So they became our help, total role reversal. So then that 2.5 hours later, or however long it took for the pilot and the station workers to dig the aeroplane out, we almost felt ridiculous getting the patient back on to say, all right, thanks for your help and your Land Cruisers. We needed two Land Cruisers in the end to pull out by the nose wheel. And then I just said, just hop back on and we'll take you to help. So I suppose that was a reminder of, there's always possibility that we will become the people in need. And certainly on this day we were. But it was good learning. We don't think about that as anything that could trouble our day as a nurse. A little patch of green grass on the side of a strip. Stay away from that. So
that's a great story. Now, if there's somebody that's listening to this podcast, Jacinta, who is in training as a nurse or is already a nurse, or even just somebody that's considering nursing as a career, would you have any advice for them based on your long career and experiences?
I would say if you always choose the window seat when you book a commercial flight, and you are interested in travel, which I think a lot of people are, and seeing more than just our local neighbourhood, flight nursing is definitely a career to aspire to. We do have requirements. We need to be a critical care nurse, either emergency or intensive care. And for Queensland, we need to be a midwife because we do. It happens when a woman goes into labour. It happens.
I think that's pretty much the case with all RFDS across the country. I think there's only a few small circumstances where you don't have to be a midwife, but pretty much all of them do.
But it's the opportunity to take your nursing skills into a very different and unique environment and reach so many different communities and so many different people in providing that care and service and make some amazing memories. Work with a team that you wouldn't normally expect to be part of your healthcare team is really quite unique as well. And just to know that every day will be different. There's no routine. There's routine in getting the aeroplane ready, but it's very different each day. And that's the variety that we enjoy clinically, but also within our own experiences and knowing that we can make a difference in such a big area is so rewarding.
Thank you so much, Jacinta, for making time in your schedule to have a chat. It's been really good.
No, thank you so much for the opportunity. Really enjoyed it. And can't express enough that what we do, we really love what we do, and we really value the support that we get from the communities into keeping our service going.
Thanks for listening. Word of mouth is always the best promotion for a podcast. So if you enjoy this podcast or a specific story, please share with family and friends. If you haven't already, join our Facebook group called the Flying Doctor Podcast Community. And you can also send feedback, questions or comments to me directly at lana.mitchell@rfds.org.au. Donations to support the Royal Flying Doctor Service can always be made through our website at flyingdoctor.org.au. The Flying Doctor Podcast was presented by me, Lana Mitchell, and senior producer is Mandy Coolan. Before I head off, I just want to thank one last time our sponsor and major national partner, Isuzu Ute Australia. Isuzu is committed to supporting the communities in which the RFDS operates, and this podcast would not be possible without their support. To learn more, search Isuzu Ute online.